DeGroff Austin was born in Fallbrook, California in 1895. He came to San Diego in 1904, attended law school, became secretary of the San Diego Rowing Club until 1950, served on the city council 4 years and 16 years as county supervisor. He tells of the growth of the Port of San Diego and the men who made it possible. He was interviewed in his home, 3570 Union Street, San Diego, overlooking Lindbergh Field, July 12, 1979, by Mildred Garden.
Mr. Austin, you want to tell us about your family background?
Yes, my name is DeGroff Austin. I am 84 years old. I was born on our family ranch near Fallbrook, California. My father was Fayette Austin. My mother was Cora Andrews Austin. Father's background was he was a sixth generation dairyman in northern New York State. There was no market for fresh milk, so they were cheesemakers, really. And he had no liking for that, spending a life at that. So his mother sent him way out west to Lansing Academy in Michigan to learn horticulture. He was a member of the class of 1875, and his dream was to see all of the northern New York State in apple trees. My mother was born of, her parents were Dr. William W. Andrews, a homeopathic physician of the class of 1857 of Resch Medical School in Chicago. In those days, the doctors didn't wait to get a degree or a diploma. When they thought they learned enough, they got out and began to practice.
What year was that?
1857. He left the college in late in 1855 and got a government job studying river diseases on the Mississippi. He met my grandmother, or my mother, he met my grandmother, for whom I was named, Marie DeGraff Andrews. They were married, and my mother was born when he was on his first study venture on the Mississippi River. Mother was born at Hannibal, Missouri in 1860. They lived in a hotel there, she, her little brother, and her mother. They were very soon taken by a guerrilla Confederate band when she was 6 years old, and were captives of the Confederate Army until they were exchanged in 1864 at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Her education consisted of high school in Winfield, Kansas, and her teaching degree in 1880 from Manhattan State Teachers College. Grandpa Andrews at that time had charge of the health services of Senator Hearst's home state mine in South Dakota, and she went up there to teach school and keep house for him, mm-hmm. where she met my father and they were married. Now my father's, I left off when he had finished Lansing Academy and gone home. And his mother, for a present, gave him a trip to California. He'd never seen the ocean, to find his brother Henry, his older brother Henry, who hadn't returned since the war between the states. And he found his brother almost immediately up at Santa Rosa. He'd never taken a steamer trip, of course, so he came to San Diego on one of the old sidewheelers and fell in love with the area in the late spring of 1876. And he took a wagon train freighter.
Now this is your father.
Excursion up through the North County. San Diego County then consisted of San Diego, Riverside, and Imperial counties, and simply fell in love with the place. Got a job at Temecula with Levi and Clauber, the general store and bought a ranch down below there near Fallbrook, and decided to improve the ranch. So 3 years later he went east. One of the ladies on the train going from the 5 day rail trip from San Francisco to Chicago was Phoebe Apperson Hearst, whose husband, Senator Hearst, ran the Home State Mine. And she got well acquainted with Dad and told him that with his education and the use of powder, he could find ready employment at the mine. She would give him a note of introduction, which she did, and he got off the train at Sidney, Nebraska, and went the 200 miles by stagecoach up to the mines in South Dakota. There he met my mother. 3 years later, they were married, and my elder sister, the late Mrs. Stanley, Marie Stanley, was born there. Well, after he had made his stake there, he didn't go east again. He went to Kansas, and Grandpa Andrews was semi-retired at that time. They decided to come to California, and they came to the train's end at Elsinore, California. It was building on into San Diego. Bought a place and stayed there for several years. Grandpa moved on in 1890 to San Diego and built his home at first at between First and Front on the north side of I Street.
What year was that, 1890?
1890. Yeah. 90. Meanwhile, my father had gotten things to moving on the ranch in very good shape, had organized the Horticultural Society of San Diego County, and he was appointed horticultural commissioner when the state legislature gave dignity to the job and the need for encouragement for the development of the several industries, growing industries throughout the state, vineyards. And
what year was that?
In 1895. And we lived back and forth between San Diego and the ranch until after I was born at the ranch in 1895. I had an older brother and two older sisters. And
1895 you were born?
I was born at the ranch in 1895.
All right.
And all of whom were born in California, except my eldest sister, who was born back in Deadwood, South Dakota. So while my father was away working as a captain in the Quartermaster Corps for the Army during the Spanish-American War, we had these two lots at the corner of Albatross and Ivy. My mother had their long-planned city home built out of his paychecks as they came in, $200 a month as a captain in the Army. And we moved to Escondido from the ranch, at least the ranch, in 1901. He had a project, father had a project for the development of a parasite for the black scale for the citrus industry. Which Mr. Teig of Santa Paula, the father of a recently late congressman, to work on, and it became so intriguing, and he did develop the parasite. The Scutellista austicanica is the name of the that destroys the black scale and is no longer a problem to citrus growers anywhere in California. After he had finished that project, it had met statewide intentions of the officials in the state agricultural department, and they founded the state insectary for the propagation of beneficial insects at Chula Vista, California. And while he was appointed the director of it, he got no salary from the state. But he did get a small salary from the county of San Diego, $4 a day on the days that he worked, and $1.50 for the use of his horse and buggy as he ambled over the county. But he had to leave that work. Mostly partisan politics obtained at that time, and he had to leave that work in 1909, the day that the big fleet, Admiral Evans and his fleet, came in.
For the first time?
Yes. 1909, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, he had developed quite a nursery business on the side, and everything was going along very beautifully. He had trees coming in, deciduous trees like apples, prunes, and so on, from the big nurseries in the central states, Missouri and Illinois, docking at Riverside or San Bernardino and distributing from there. One of his brightest pupils, by the way, was Harry Shepard, who later became the congressman from that area, and was so very helpful to San Diego in connection with his heading up the appropriations section of the Armed Forces Committee of the Lower House. But at any rate, that was about the business. I was born in Fallbrook. We lived that period of time in Escondido till 1904, the fall of 1904, when we moved to our city home up on Albatross and Ivy, so that Marie, my eldest sister, could attend the normal school, and my youngest sister could attend kindergarten. We lived there not too very long, however, because he traded that place away for acreage in Logan Heights, reaching down over Chilla Valley, which he later subdivided and sold. I entered the fourth grade and was spent a year at Washington School, then called Middletown School, and the balance of my grade school education was at Logan School and San Diego High School, where I finished in 1913. I had the fall of 1912, we had that terrible frost that ruined our nursery holdings and froze out the little stand of trees that I had been raising instead of carrying paper routes and that sort of thing for money. I'd been raising and had over 3,000 trees in this nursery over a period of 4 years. I'd been raising them and they were simply wiped out. I finally realized less than $400 out of the whole crop, and I had a ready market for them at $1 apiece. That was to be my college money. I had set my heart on going to Pomona College, and I did, with $375, and attended there 2 years. While I was up there, I did some babysitting for the young boys of Mr. Arthur Savage, the firearms inventor, who lived close by in Duarte, but whose boys were going to this boarding school, and became well acquainted with Mr. Savage, who was then organizing a tire factory here in San Diego. And I wanted to study law, and I left Pomona at the end of my second year and attended the Hamilton Lindley Knight Law School here in San Diego. Mr. Savage was very kind and agreed in advance that he was just as interested as I was in this further education. It was very helpful to me. So I studied law and stayed there until I enlisted in the Air Service in 1917 in late August, went to the ground school, aviation, at the University of California. While I was up there, I had quite finished my law course, but I took the bar examination anyway at Boot Hall, the second class, and passed it. And after I got through with the Army, I came home again. Things had changed at Savage Tire. I took a job as secretary at the San Diego Rowing Club in May of 1920. I had thought it would be a good meal ticket, the meager salary of secretary, while I got myself established in the law. However, the work at the Rowing Club paid so much more than any of the young lawyers around were making, or bankers, that I stayed there until 30 years at that stretch, until 1950. And that life on the waterfront was my life. Dr. Shirley Shaw, an old Pomona grad who had
the wheelchair. Shirley?
Shirley. Who had the Wilshire Christian Church in Los Angeles, then the Ontario Christian Church in Ontario, before he came to San Diego, talked to me of this was my ministry. And it was. It was an enjoyable thing. And the club started when I commenced to work there with about 450 to 500 members. We had the membership up to 1,300 before I left. And it was a great experience meeting all these men.
1,300.
It was a great experience meeting all of these men. Men of every level of life here were prominent.
What was the purpose of the club? Would you like to explain it? I think I've heard of it a lot, but I'm not familiar with what it is.
The name is a misnomer. It's a athletic club concentrating on rowing, swimming, handball, and attendant sports. And we branched out into almost everything. We were in a bowling league. We had a track team, cross-country running. We had a fishing competition going on in the summer months, and almost anything you'd like to do. And they would back several other projects, such as Boy Scouts and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the Boy Scouts, as a matter of fact, with the help of Mr. William Fisher, and then Captain Chester Nimitz of the destroyer base, we established the first ship's company of the Sea Scouts. Admiral Nimitz gave us three motor sailing vessels of the Victorian age on receipt, and the club still has one of them on deck. Well, at any rate, that was a long and interesting story with the Sea Scouts.
I'd like to hear more about it as we go along.
Yes.
Whatever, you know, because it has a great deal to do with the San Diego.
Yes. Well, San Diego's relationship with the Bay changed completely with the coming into the governorship of Hiram Johnson. And under an act of the legislature in 1911, the tidelands were all given to the states upon their application for them. They were given to the cities to manage and control. And that caused some confusion, but...
What year was that,
The state session of 1911. The very first session of the legislature. And there was a great warring of different interests wanting to have tidewater facilities. And it took a strong man to manage it, and a fellow who was a great improviser. Almost immediately, the port directors of the Harbor Commission appointed Joe Brennan. Captain Joe Brennan was as fine a man as I ever met. He came here as a child in the late 90s when...
Now, he was port commissioner?
He was harbor master.
Harbor master, because under that's the, what was under the
Board of Harbor Commissioners. His folks came here for his father's assignment to the keeper of the Point Loma Lighthouse when it was first built. And... Anyway, Joe was a marvel. The way he could recruit people to do things and to induce new businesses to come here at almost a was the cause of his undoing in several times when he would say no. And at any rate, in those days, the Benson Lumber Company of here and Astoria, Oregon.
He was there too?
And they,
both places?
They contrived the idea of making logs, making a raft of logs out of the forest in a cradle, shape of a cigar, and somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 feet long, bound with heavy, heavy chains, and seagoing, and towing them to San Diego, and then releasing the chains and cutting the logs into lumber. So we had our first big lumber mill for many, many years in 1912 or 13 was when it started up. Up until very recently.
Did the other lumber companies take the logs?
Benson was the only mill. There were other lumber yards and mills that would take the rough Benson lumber and cut it into finished lumber. They had big dry.
Benson was the rough lumber.
Yes.
And then the others were finished.
Mm-hmm.
I knew there was more than one down there. Wait a minute. It had two tugs. You say no, it only had one?
One tug for the sea voyage. Two to get it, sometimes three or four, to get it into the harbor.
To get it into the harbor. In and out of the harbors, I imagine.
Yeah. Into San Diego Harbor is all I know about.
Yeah. That's great. That's about the year that the freeze was, 1912-13.
It was the same time as the wreck of the Titanic. You wouldn't remember that.
Oh, I've heard about it, of course.
In the late fall of 1912, almost Thanksgiving time.
Now, then you got here in time to be able to see and know what San Diego Harbor looked like at the start, at the turn of the century.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see, you weren't old enough though for the turn of the century, were you? No. But what you've, where was the water line here at that time?
Well, this is all mud flats up in here, Dutch flats. Maybe I better get it the Speckles angle and the harbor development and Mr. Marston's activities.
Yes.
There were, shall we go on the tape now? There were two giants in the long-range thinking for development of the harbor and its facilities. Mr. Speckles was the first who arrived here, somewhat like my father came to California, fell in love with the place in the late 80s, located here and bought out the Coronado Hotel and North Island, built a big wharf, a coal bunker wharf, where coal at the foot of G Street, where coal came by the shipload from all points in the world that produced coal and was stored and then was sold to ships burning coal for their
farm. Where did they store it?
What's that?
Where did they store it?
They stored it in these bunkers that were built on top of the wharf.
Uh-huh.
Big containers on top of the wharf. So that they could, they'd unload the coal, mostly from sailing vessels, up into these bunkers that were placed high up, and they'd come down through these containers into the barges that fed the ships that were putting on the coal for fuel. Yeah. He bought out Mr. Babcock and set up the ferry system to Coronado, established the electric railroad system for, which was a considerable venture and very satisfactory even those earliest days, because he never bothered about letting things deteriorate. He went right forward with them, and he bought the Union, the paper, and published it, and was a leading figure in almost every avenue of development. Mr. Marston, a merchant, was a prodigious worker for development with beauty, and he brought a community planner, I can't think of his name except John somebody from Boston, to lay out a plan for the development of the harbor. And this plan is pretty largely the way things finally went, although there was much of a struggle all the way along the line. The plan included the use of areas north of Broadway as a terminal for passenger steamers and that kind of traffic that had to be accommodated, north of Market Street, really, and that enveloped the Bunker's Wharf of the Streckles. And southeast of there, the commercial development that fell into place as a result.
Now, that north of Market was developed for what?
North of Market was developed, or headed by and on this plan of development, north of, I would say, F Street, for the terminal for the passenger vessels that would come to town. And bond issues was passed, and there was built in time for the opening of the exposition in 1915, a municipal pier at the foot of Broadway with accommodations for landing passenger steamer, two big steamers on either side of the pier, and a bulkhead put in that went up as far as Date Street. And
now, bulkhead, what are you?
The dredge material from the bottom of the bay filled all of that area back. The shoreline used to be just about 50 to 75 feet westerly of the main line of the Santa Fe coming in. That was all bayfront and bay, shallow water in the bay. And later there were more bond issues, and the bulkhead was extended clear on up to about Juniper Street.
I don't think I understand what you mean by bulkhead. Would you mind trying to tell me what the bulkhead meant?
The bulkhead was nothing more than a big cement piles driven and big cement blocks put in back to hold the land away from the water. So the boats could come right up to the outside of the bulkhead and land and be on the level of the ground on shore. It was in about 1912 and 13 that we first began to eat tuna and can it for eating. Before that, we used to have the run of tuna every year, and it was sold as a fresh fish to the limited market. Then at one time, there must have been in the neighborhood of seven or eight sizable canneries. Only one has survived to this day. That is the Westgate that was established.
Where is that now?
Westgate.
Where is
Tuna
it?
Packing Company.
Where is it located?
And it was located at the corner of what is now Rural and Pacific. Where?
Is it still there?
Well, no sewer takes all of that area up now. But anyway, they ran all the way around, and there were two large canneries in Logan Heights on the shoreline. The process of canning tuna was greatly improved, and it found worldwide distribution as a market, very profitable and very much worthwhile. And while seasonal, it would give employment to many hundreds of people. And then they began to can other things too, you know, mm-hmm. along with it. Mr. Marston was prodigious in his efforts at insisting that beauty should be incorporated in any kind of civic development. Balboa Park stands as a great example of his finesse in that kind of thing, and as does the smaller Presidio Park that he bought and developed and gave to the city.
Yeah.
On Mr. George Marston, I want to say his generosity was tremendous, as his desire to get things to looking beautiful as well as well-developed, as soundly developed. The area of the Tidelands north of Ice Street and up to Grape Street had been filled in and was occupied very sparsely by...
Filled in how far in?
Well, it was...
Ash from Grape, but how far in did they fill it? To what street?
Well, they filled it clear up to the right-of-way of the Santa Fe, which was on the bluff.
Ah, all right.
And,
bluff? It was on the bluff?
Well, the bluffs commenced about Grape Street that used to go around the bay here, yes. And all of that was filled in area, and not but a little corner of it, up in the northeast corner, was in any kind of use. The city, through its port...